Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Radio Tony Everyday Business. I'm going to start the day with something I've been meaning to do for a long time, and that's Australia's welcome to country. And it's a little statement that goes like this. I'd like to pay my respects to wherever this transmission is going out, to all the Indigenous elders, past, present and future. And I want to make that part of our everyday business show from now on. Now, thank you for being patient today. Once again, we've had some little technical issues, and I was saying to our wonderful guest that we have not had technical issues quite like we've had in the last week in a long time. So something's happening out there in the world. Welcome to everyone listening across the planet, especially a big hello to you in Russia and Germany and those who are listening live in the USA. This is the Everyday Business Show. It's streaming live on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitch, Twitter, and everywhere else. And Payo is listening live in the Philippines to answer all your questions and provide links and information to anything we talk about on the show today. Now, we have a wonderful guest with us today. And as you know, I have a particular love for talking to our artistic and creative humans across the planet, and Patrick is no different. He is a visual artist who was born in Sydney in 1973 and grew up in Hunters Hill. He has been making art ever since he can remember, drawing the Hunters Hill post office when he was just 13. And built in 1891, it was designed by a government architect by the name of Walter Liberty Vernon in the in the Queen Anne style. Patrick graduated from Canberra School of Art, Australian National University, in 1996, and he enjoyed enriching working experience as a student exchange recipient at the École Nationale Supérieure des Beaux-Arts for 5 months in 1995 and 1996. Patrick suffered from a mental health problem after being hospitalised in the south of France, and now Patrick has largely overcome that health issue and he draws in pastels or Conte paints in oil colours and occasionally in watercolours. Patrick has shown his artworks in 7 solo shows and 48 group exhibitions, as far west as Kingston in the ACT and as far north as Peambal in New South Wales, as far east as Bronte and as far south as Acton in the Australian Capital Territory. As a member of the Blue Mountains Community Arts Network, Patrick was invited to exhibit his painting, Macquarie Road, and he has done that in the Blue Mountains Community Art Centre. Patrick adores to draw sitters, portraits in pastel and Conte, generally from JPEGs. And when we say JPEGs, I'm going to ask Patrick about that later in the interview, by adding a background image from his favourite holiday snaps. Conte, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I'll check with Patrick in a minute, is a hard, waxy stick like a crayon, and it is virtually indelible once it's applied to fine art paper. Patrick only uses archival quality materials throughout his practice, and he is also registered as a New South Wales eco-aware artist. Now, there's lots more that I can tell you about Patrick, but I'd really like to get on with our interview today because I've been dying to talk to Patrick about a whole range of things. Now, our first question today relates to his youth proposed 2008 oil on canvas painting, which I'm going to share my screen and show you in just a moment. So, Patrick, I know that you're a gifted artist and you're interested mostly in the art of Conte, or as we described before, the wax crayon drawings. And together with a background image from your favorite holiday snap, you create these amazing paintings. So you've studied at Ensabar in Paris for 5 months over the winter of 1995 and 1996. What was that like?
It was an incredible time for me. So I'm just going to talk briefly about the painting, the oil painting. Although this oil painting was painted in 2008, it was originally from my Nîmes series, started in 1997. Part of the painting using the Grisaille technique. Technically the mise-en-scène series, and I also include this in my later series, which began in 2009. I was accepted as a student exchange participant at ENSPA, an art school in Paris in France. This was a fantastic time for me during that winter. Although my French wasn't good enough to attend classes, I spent my days in the painting department, also visiting the morphology department that had numerous skeletal specimens of creatures like pumas and zebras. Yes. So whilst on holidays from ENSPA, I travelled to Nîmes in the south of France, where you can still see the striking statue of the bullfighter that features in this in the centre of this artwork. A young woman, American woman, has cheekily posed for a photo with her hand on his bottom, whilst two groups of youths engage in a psychological fight over aspects of my soul. To illustrate this battle, I've appropriated images from the Star Wars films, including Boba Fett, as seen on the left-hand side, and Jango Fett, seen on the right-hand side.
So let me just grab that one, holding the rifle, the blaster. Oh, sorry, wrong one. This one. There we go.
The previous one. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Can we maybe zoom
Patrick,
in?
Patrick. I will attempt to. Mm-hmm. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, much better. Yeah.
There we go. How beautiful are those colours, Patrick?
Thank you.
You go.
Oh, I was just going to say the yellows there are quite sort of reminiscent of the beach, so it kind of ties in the Australian and the French sort of background that I've got there. So that's kind of curious. And then we've got this. She's sort of standing in the like a cloud of blast from the one of the stormtroopers.
Yes.
Which is taken from A New Hope, Star Wars A New Hope. But you can see the two stormtroopers on the right. And that's just in the scene where Leia and Luke cross the chasm with Luke fires the bolt and they've got the grappling hook. Yeah.
Fantastic. When you look at it closely, like when I was looking last week at your paintings, not only are they beautiful, but there's an incredible amount of depth and detail within the painting itself. How long, Patrick, does it take to create a masterpiece like this?
That one probably took, because I only work on it in bits and pieces, in dribs and drabs, it probably took about a month, I would say, but maybe all up, I don't know, 70 hours, just guessing here. But, yeah, so I don't work on it full time. I work on it when I have time.
It's very beautiful.
So, thank you very much.
So, Patrick, since drawing Neil as playing a Shakespearean character in Dead Poets Society in 2003 in Conte on Paper, you've produced numerous actor portraits from television and screen. And you do these portraits again. You start with a JPEG or a photo. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Yeah. So I used to simply pause the DVD at a particular point of the actor's performance.
Yeah.
So straight from the TV screen. At the point that struck a chord with me, then I would draw what was on the screen. However, In the streaming age, I often take a screen capture of the image, so turn it into a JPEG, in effect, and then I might adjust slightly using my Photoshop Express app, and then draw the resulting image from the iPad or iPhone screen. So
let me just make this a little bit bigger for us.
That's one of the
how's that? Look at the color. Look at that beautiful color in there. Patrick, why do particular actors or actresses capture your imagination?
I think probably because not only do I like their performance and I think they're a great actor or actress, also because I think something about that scene reveals something about them and that resonates in me. It's really just as simple as that. I think, and also the composition, because my work is very much driven by composing the composition. And in this image, it's a little bit unbalanced towards the left, but that kind of makes her stillness balances on the left, balances the action and the movement on the right. So that Conte and pastel drawing of Robin Tunney was paused from the 1980s comedy drama Empire Records. So it represents her with her hand frozen, placing an album on the shelf, so her left hand is blurred and distorted. And my viewers have agreed with me, with my statement, that she looks a little bit like a female Buddhist monk. Her close cropped hair mirrors that of a figure in a large-scale stretched drawing from my equine behaviour series that was sold in 2010. So as you said, Conte is a hard, waxy substance and it's sold in pieces like thin pastels. And so once a mark is layered upon the drawing, it becomes very difficult to remove it. So, therefore, it's an unforgiving drawing medium.
But it does mean that you can create something that is going to be have longevity. Like, once it's on that fine art, that particular line or brush stroke, or it's not going to move anywhere, is it?
Well, yes, and also you can apply other colours over the top of it and it will mix slightly.
Yes.
So you can see on her cheek a very pale pink. Now that pink's probably made up of a little bit of yellow, a little bit more red, and a tiny bit of brown pastel.
Yes. Mm.
So
It's very, really lovely.
Mainly red, So it can allow for quite subtle sort of, because you can draw a really thin line with it, it allows for very subtle application. You can make a thick, heavy line or a smooth, like you use the flat of the Conte, like you do with pastels, and make a very smooth line with it, or you can make a very fine, light line with it.
Patrick, the next image we have to share with the audience, can you tell us about that one?
So the second image utilises the second method, whereby I do a screen capture of it. And so I've actually that the hues on the right-hand side of our tea tree, Jack Sparrow, whilst draining all colour from the image to the left of our famously popular character from Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. So in this artwork, he's watching a gourd slide down the bamboo pole that he's using as a balance. So if you keep that in mind, it actually explains what's going on. So the viewpoint is actually very high over his shoulders and he's got his head raised backwards and looking at the gourd or the fruit sliding down the pole.
Another beautiful artwork, Patrick. I love the colours in his headscarf and the watch in the top right-hand corner. Does that signify anything?
I don't think it's actually a watch. Good question. I don't actually think it's actually a watch, but a little talisman from the Caribbean sort of period dress. Like they would have worn things like that probably as a good luck talisman or something that they stole or whatever it was. So I think that's just part of his costume. But it could, I mean, it could be a watch, but I don't think it is. It's a bit of jewellery,
Yeah. Again, actually, beautiful colours.
Thank you. And actually, I think he's got little ringlets on his braids, but you can't see them, unfortunately, in this. They're sort of towards the end of his term. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Very good.
He would have heard.
Patrick, you had an interest in creating drawings and then oil paintings of and about horses. Why do you love horses?
So when I was 16 years old, I read the play Equus by Peter Schaeffer, written in the year of my birth, 1973. So it describes, using abreaction, how a 17-year-old boy blinds six horses. But I have used the play's title to describe a collective and spiritual being that links the souls of horses. So if we look at this print and drawing on stretched canvas paper,
yes,
The Unseen Heart of Zagreus, it utilizes the ancient Greek myth, that is, Zeus impregnates Persephone. Hades entrusts a few curates to entertain Zagreus the baby, which they do. But they soon fall asleep. Their enemies, the Titans, lure Zagreus away with the following: a cone, a bull roarer, golden apples, a mirror, a knuckle bone, and a tuft of wool. All are present in my drawing. As you can see, So
yes,
Zagreus,
I can see.
Zagreus tries to escape them by assuming several forms before they tore apart his bovine form, so he's turned into a bull. So then Athena stops them, but all that is left is his heart. She places it in a gypsum figure, which is a sort of white clay material, and she brings life into it and makes him immortal. So I've placed groups of horses around the outside of this, drawn in willow charcoal. They enact various forms of dominance and submission, which is reflected in the monoprinted eye bar diagram. Zagreus's heart is depicted in the center, melded with a bull's head, and, as I call it, a composite symbol.
Wow.
So, yeah, I sort of play around with that sort of that composite symbol at the time then.
Yes. Patrick, can I ask, for those in the audience that are not familiar with the tools of artists, what is willow charcoal and why do you choose that medium over something else? Does it have a is it softer than normal charcoal, or is it just a preference?
It's actually quite brittle. It comes in like little stick forms, and even though it's quite brittle, it's very delicate, and you can actually, again, get very delicate lines with it, using the edge of it, like it comes in a thin stick form, or you can sort of push a bit harder and get sort of like a line that's about maybe 1/6 of an inch or 4 millimetres. So it's very versatile. And it's very sensitive. More to the point, it's very sensitive to the touch. So if you want to make a very fine line, you can make it as fine as a human hair with the word charcoal. So that's why I used it in that drawing.
Wow.
And it can be very expressive too. You can make very expressive lines. So we're going to go on to the
third slide. The third slide I've actually got up at the moment is your oil painting. So we're moving through the types of materials that you use to create your artwork, and this one is done in oils. Now, why oils, Patrick? And you can tell very clearly that it's a different medium, can't you?
Exactly. And it being a painting medium, the application is completely different as one would expect. But also, I actually didn't paint with oil, to be honest. I didn't paint with oils until I started. But before that, I used to paint a lot with watercolours. So it was only a natural progression for me to use a lot of blazers. So this oil painting is from 1996, and it's called The Plain of Innocence. So as we can see, I've begun to use glazes in thin oil paint, but I've not used a light purple or blue grisaille, which is just basically the base layer of the painting. Like my later paintings from the Mise en Scène series or my current Bowie / Brassfort series. So you can see that this is painted probably, I've probably used tape to divide the, masking tape to divide the painting into three sections, and then probably painted like a light brown on the left, a very dark, almost black blue in the middle, and then that that reddish orange on the right is probably what I painted the whole thing with, and then painted the horse's head over the top, and then progressively made up layers of blazes. But the thing with a lot of people don't like all colours because you have to wait probably about at least half a day for the glaze to dry. So there's only a limited amount of painting that you can do each day. So that's why people tend to you'll work on different things a day, different paintings in one go. But I, when I was working at art school, painting was only on Tuesday night. So
I generally that was okay.
Yeah, the glazes to dry. Yeah.
Ah, it's again another stunning piece of work, Patrick. There are three main streams of your profession and practice, and that's portraiture, oil paintings, and drawings. How do they relate to your current series, the Bashford series and the Equine Behavioural series?
Brassfort and Equine Behaviour Series. Yeah. So which image are we going to look at first?
This one that shows the mock-up and then the final, which I just love this slide, actually. Yeah.
Thank you. So the background image for both of these slides was taken with my mobile phone near Wentworth Falls in the beautiful Blue Mountains where I live. At the top of this cliff about 150 years ago, an Irish immigrant, Peter Mulleran, built a house that became a pub, which was later moved closer to Wentworth Falls train station. His sign can be seen in the lower section.
Right there.
Spot on. So a partially abstracted nude man is lounging on his back, eyes obscured by a black rectangle. The Italian actress Isabella Rossellini. Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
He hovers above him, adjusting her garter. Abstract ribbons of paint festoon the space behind our heroine.
Yes.
So the reason people to ask me, why has he got that rectangle on his face? Well, I've kind of thought about this artwork and maybe its meaning. And its meaning is actually open to interpretation, like a lot of mine. But if you ask a woman to describe the face of a man she finds attractive, they're all going to be different. However, the body's probably going to be pretty similar. So really this is a painting about like the ultimate sort of man for a woman, and pretty much Isabella Rossellini probably scores pretty highly in the eyes of most film-going men, I guess I would say. So, it's
definitely
probably, catering to
And now I can clearly... you can clearly see that how you've started with the actual photograph and how it's morphed into the beautiful creation on the right-hand side of the screen, and how you've used the photograph as a basis for the direction of your artwork.
Exactly.
You do that quite a lot, don't you, Patrick?
Yes. So I do use photograph a lot, especially these days. So you can see in the final oil painting, the surrealist oil painting, that the native plants on the cliff face have a greater variety of hues, and the lighter, more pastel tones, So the waterfall shown below Rossellini is cobalt blue, whereas in the original mock-up, black and white. And a blue has been added to one ribbon, and greens have been added.
Around,
on the bottom towards the man, and also near Isabella Rossellini there as well. So, as with the previous drawings, we can see that there is a reliance on symbolism and figures, both nude and clothed, equine and human. to poetically describe differences in stories. Not only this, but I also describe similarities between themes in my portraits or paintings and drawings.
Patrick, do you always follow themes of people, horses, etc.? Is that part of what you like to do?
I think that's probably, it's probably a bit of a hangover from when I did read that play, and I pretty much went through high school. I was pretty much obsessed with horses, and that would be my sort of focus, I guess. And both my major artworks for the HSC were about horses. So I think it's sort of a residue of that concentration of my energies. Yeah. But I'm also very much drawn to the nude and human figures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, because they're all very unique, aren't they? All very different.
And go ahead.
You describe yourself as a postmodern surrealist. Can you explain what a postmodern surrealist is?
I can. So even though postmodernism began around 1917 as an architectural movement, it transformed into an appropriation of architectural styles. So in a sense, there is a parallel between the rise of Romanticism in the 19th century, the period in which Wentworth Falls, indeed the whole of the Blue Mountains, was settled and divided by white immigrants into places like housing estates, like Brassfort, as it was once known. And that Brassfort means strong arm in French. That's all it means. So there's a combination of postmodernism in art in America and in quietly working artists like John Bowman, who used romance and irony in equal measure in the 1990s. So I hope that some of this romance can be seen in the left and centre panels of my large drawing that we can see on the screen. That's drawn on stretched Canson paper, Three Modern Martyrs, depicting a beautiful statue of the Buddha carved out of a cliff and destroyed by the Taliban, or the hide of fire in his centre panel. So that's in that centre panel depicts fire as is his hide shown in the Museum of Victoria, the National Museum in Victoria. So surely there's an irony in the reproduction of a 19th century French painting of Jesus in the right-hand panel. And then it kind of refers to a obscure science fiction novel that I really liked. But people can sort of look that up if they want to. So perhaps frontal representation of the human figure with a strong light from one side as championed by Edouard Manet can be seen in my draftsmanship, because that's what his focus was. It was depicting the human figure in paintings from the front, which hadn't really been done very much previously to Manet. So if we move to the next
which is Ferguson Road. There we go. Oh, that's beautiful. Every time I see it, I think it's beautiful, Patrick.
Thank you.
I really like it.
Can we zoom in a little bit, please? Thanks.
I've been trying to zoom in. Oh, there we go. Finally, there we go. That's better. How's that?
So, excellent. Thank you. So, certainly the seated female figure in my smaller oil painting, Ferguson Road, emulates Manet's Olympia. Given that she's a reclining figure. Like the Italian modernist painter Giorgio de Chirico, many of my artworks from my Missing Scene series utilize streetscapes, sections of maps, or in this case, the illustration of Ubu Roy, so he can be seen in the top left-hand corner. And he's from the Dada play of the same title, Ubu Roy. Dada is, of course, also known as an art movement prior to the European Surrealist art movement. So indeed, one of my favourite artists, Francis Picabia, is known for his paintings that represent the female figure in unusual poses. His early artworks tend towards the cubist, and his later artworks have a kind of preoccupation with the pin-up, a photographic sensibility of the nude figure. This can be also said of my nudes in my masterpiece, Macquarie Road.
Is Macquarie Road.
The rest of the title is Macquarie Road, Why Should You Be Different from Other Men? I'm told that there is hardly a husband in London who does not waste his life over some shameful passion. Which, of course, is a quote from Oscar Wilde and the importance of being earnest. So, I'm just catching up with myself. The mock-up that I constructed, which you can see now, is constructed out of 27 layers of photographs, also depicts the actress Brit Eklund from the Hammer horror film The Wicker Man. I have consciously retained the horizontal cathode rays that make up her face, effectively quoting video modes of representation. This mock-up shows, in addition, the lilac blue colour that I painted as an underpainting grisaille layer, much like Leonardo da Vinci and Rubens would have used. Yes. So the plastic bag of citrus plant food seen in this final slide today in the finished artwork retains or remains painted in this lovely lilac blue. It's a monochrome layer. Keep that in mind. So if we just zoom up a little bit when you're ready. Thanks, Tony. So this hue or colour can also be discerned in the oval shape derived from a photo of a plate of bananas that was manipulated using a difference cloud command on Photoshop, visible just behind our three nude swimmers, which Tony has very helpfully shown in the centre.
Can you see it, people?
So that's that kind of watery, that's that watery oval shape behind the swimmers. So that had actually originally started out life as a simple photograph of a metal plate with bananas on it. And then when I selected that and pressed difference cloud, and then I kept pressing the difference cloud button, and it would slowly distort the image, and it came up with a very kind of like wishy-washy blue light. Blue tones, a little bit of pink in there, a little touch of green, which kind of draws colours from the rest of the painting in there.
And I love the fact that you can see the elements of an original landscape photo in the background as well.
And actually, if you go to the Braemar Gallery to see my exhibition at the end of the year, that I'm featuring, that is the front of that gallery. Yes. There's signboards on the left. So it's just on a pin.
Amazing. I love this combination of colours up in the top left-hand corner of the painting. That's really a beautiful combination of colours, and it's really wonderful artwork, Patrick. Before we run out of time, can you tell the audience about your exhibitions and the upcoming exhibitions that you've got on?
Certainly, Tony. So one of my drawings was accepted into the Fisher's Ghost Art Award exhibition as a finalist. So the exhibition runs until the 10th of December. It's currently running, and it is being shown at the Campbelltown Arts Centre, and that's located at One Art Gallery Road, I believe. Correction there. Campbelltown, New South Wales.
Campbelltown.
So that's open. Mm-hmm. Campbelltown, yeah. That's open Monday to Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So anyone can go and check that out. I think there are some COVID-19 restrictions, so you might just want to check that out on there, because they're definitely you can look that up on the internet. Yeah. So, and then one of my other exhibitions is a group show, which I think you had the slide for. Yeah.
It is just coming forward for you right now.
Thank you.
There we go.
Yes, so this
That's great. That must be exciting to have your works in an art gallery, Patrick.
Yes, yes. Well, especially now that I haven't been able to exhibit all throughout the Sydney lockdown period, so bear that in mind.
Yes!
So it means that it's basically like having your shop closed for, you know, almost a year, and then finally we'll be able to exhibit. So I'm very much looking forward to it, so this
Patrick,
is the... Yes?
Yeah, I'll let you tell us about the exhibition first, and then I've got some more questions for you.
Sure, no worries. So I'm participating in this group art exhibition called Braemar Volunteers 2021. That will be shown from the 9th of December 2021 to the 16th of January 2022. Braemar Gallery, as we can see there, is open on Thursdays through to Sundays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I think it's closed on public holidays, but it might be open on Boxing Day. But anyway, check that out online too. You can search Braemar House or Braemar Gallery. Both should
be and you'll find it.
And exhibitions are subject to COVID-19 restrictions at Braemar Gallery.
Definitely.
And then I've also proposed to exhibit a solo exhibition at Rex Livingston Art and Objects, and that's in Katoomba, New South Wales. It's a gallery that David Rex Livingston is the director of there, and that will possibly be in 2022, but this is still in consultation with him. Yeah.
Fantastic. Patrick, my question is, when you have a number of exhibitions of your works occurring simultaneously, do you actually attend so that the visitors can ask you questions, or what happens? I've never actually asked an artist about that. Most of the artists I've talked to have either their own gallery, so they're kind of there painting in real time, but you've got a number of exhibitions on and you can't physically be at all of them. So what happens in that circumstance? Do you visit on certain days, or how does it work?
Well, actually, in the case of Braemar Gallery, I'll be there for one entire day of every month because I volunteer there. So I'll be volunteering during the Braemar Volunteers exhibition, but also most exhibitions held in commercial galleries or private galleries will have an art opening, an official art opening where people will be invited, and actually anyone can attend those. People don't really understand this, but anyone can attend those art opening exhibitions, and there'll be refreshments served, and you can chat to the artists and you can chat to the director, or in this case, Braemar House will possibly hold, I'm not sure, but they'll possibly hold an exhibition opening. Maybe, maybe not. But I do know at the exhibition for the Fisher's Ghost Art Award, they will be holding a closing ceremony. On the 10th of December. So you can anyone can turn up to that, subject to COVID-19 restrictions. And I'll be definitely there. And so that's why I tend to turn up to the openings here generally,
Good, good, good. One of the other questions that I was interested, and please tell me if you're comfortable answering this, having had my own extensive battles with anxiety and depression and trying to navigate my way out the other side of that, I'm wondering how important your art and creativity is in helping you heal that process.
Well, actually, that's a very good question. I'm very happy to answer it, Tony. And it's very simply answered in that people say that art is a really good mode of therapy, and it's true. Because when I started working on my Neem series, I really didn't really have a definite idea of where my painting was going as opposed to my drawing.
Yes.
So I decided I would base a whole lot of artworks on my experiences in Neem in the south of France. And Because of in one aspect, when I'm going through a psychosis or being affected, going through an episode, it's quite stressful to myself. But then if you kind of divorce yourself from your experience and look at yourself going through all this from an observer's point of view, it's highly humorous in a sense, in that if you were to have this all played out, like in my next painting that I'm going to do for the Neem series, when I get back to that series, is going to be titled The Moonraker Ambulance. So if you can imagine an ambulance sort of tearing around the corner and me in a stretcher being flung to side to side, maybe a poster with a scene from Moonraker on there. So it becomes quite kind of humorous and but in a good sense, in a kind of like a again, I go back to abreaction. It's an abreaction or a cathartic experience. In if when you start painting these images, you get it out from yourself. You're able to express it, and you're able to talk about it with other people. And people will say, like you just did then, "Oh, I've had a mental health
long-term battle." Yeah,
exactly, with anxiety or depression or whatever it might be, and you'll find that you're not alone. Because I used to belong to a local art group called 1 in 5, and 1 in 5 people do suffer from some form of mental health problem. So,
absolutely. And the first time this happened to you, you weren't home. You were actually overseas in France, weren't you?
Well, that was That was quite a severe episode that I had then. But something in the severity, again, was quite humorous. But I actually had a small episode in Canberra, and my best mate he thought there was something wrong with me, so he called up my mother, and she called me, and she came and picked me up. We went to a doctor, and he basically found out, took me into the room and said, "Patrick, you have schizophrenia." So that hit me like a ton of bricks. But then you kind of sort through things and compartmentalize things and digest things, and eventually you're able to work your way through it.
Yes.
And so these days it barely affects me at all. You know, I might hear the occasional voice, or I might have a weird thought, but at the end of the day, it really affects my life.
It's really helpful to have a diagnosis, because before I had a diagnosis, I just thought I was bloody crazy, quite frankly. And it actually enabled me to go, okay, no, there's a chemical imbalance in my brain and it causes this, 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 and this. Okay, well, I can work with that. And I'm guessing that it's the same for you. Okay, well, that's what's the problem. I can work with that. As long as you know that that's what the issue is, you can go, oh, okay, righto. And it's much easier to deal with than undiagnosed mental illness is incredibly hard on everyone, from yourself to your greater family and friends, because not only do you not know what's going on, neither do they, but once you have a diagnosis and you can freely share and go, having a rough one today, just give me some space or whatever it needs. And I can see that your beautiful art pieces would be very instrumental in helping you deal, and it comes across in your artwork as a very beautiful presentation of what might sit behind that mental illness. It's really, really lovely. I like too that as an artist, there's a number of different genres that you create within. The products you use are different and diverse, and it just produces this unique range of art collection that is uniquely Patrick Romas, isn't it?
Exactly. Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. There are a few kind of strands to my artworks in terms of ongoing series. But to get back to a little bit to what you were saying before, until you get diagnosed, it becomes, and some people take years to be diagnosed with a particular mental health problem or issue, But when you are able to be diagnosed, then you can start to work on that with your health professional, or in my case, a psychiatrist. And I see them
Absolutely.
twice a year. So I think that's really valuable help. And it means that you have the tools at your disposal to combat this problem.
Correct.
And if you can combat
Whereas
it, then you've done.
before,
Yeah.
but before diagnosis, you don't have any tools. You don't have anyone to help. You don't have anyone to explain what's going on inside of your mind and your brain. But once you get to diagnosis, there are tools, there is help, and you begin to understand what's happening in your brain. And it is very liberating, I found. And I went undiagnosed for the best part of 20, 25 years. So I was a long time in no man's land. So I'm really glad that you have that knowledge and help, Patrick, right now, because the world would be sadly miss the level of your artistic expertise, and we would not have your beautiful drawings. So it's a good thing to know. Patrick, just quickly before we run out of time, where can people buy your art? Because you are associated with an amazing site that has all of your artwork on it. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so I've been a member of Blue Thumb for about probably almost 2 years now. And so that address is bluethumb.com.au/Patrick-Romus. So that's spelled Patrick hyphen Romas. And if you go there, you'll see all
All
of
of your
my
stuff.
on sale. Yeah, all of my artwork's on sale, and you can purchase them at very competitive prices.
Ah, that's wonderful.
And you can actually see them in different frames. They have an app there, or a way that you can actually change your frames if you want to, and order your frames with the artwork.
Fantastic. Patrick, we are just about out of time. I just want to particularly thank you for having the courage to come on live TV despite the challenges of tech that we had earlier in the show. I'm delighted to have spent this time with you talking about your artwork and showcasing it to our audience. Don't forget, audience, I'd love you to jump on to bluethumb.com.au/Patrick Romus, and those links will also be attached to this video wherever you are watching and wherever you're re-watching it. Of course, if you're on the live feeds now, you will have that feeding into your chat stream just as we speak. Patrick, thank you so much for being on Radio Tony Everyday Business. It's a pure delight to have the opportunity to talk to artists. We don't get enough on the show. And of course, your business is art. Your business is painting. Your business is
Yes.
drawing. Your business is creating. And we want to showcase all sorts of businesses on this show. And I'm incredibly grateful that you agreed to come on the show today. Patrick Romus, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm very grateful to speak to you today, Tony. It has been a delight. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here. That, my audience, is your lot for this week. We will be back next week with Everyday Business. Please thank Patrick, and for sure, go and check out his upcoming exhibitions and his artwork online. Patrick Romus, thank you so much. That's your lot for this week. Bye for now, everyone.